Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 24, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, text number 65. Yasyananam makara kunda charu karna. Rajat kapola subhagam suvilasahasam. Niyotsavam na tatripur rishi pibanto. Naryo narascha mudita kupita nimeshta. Yasya. Whose? Ananam, face, makara kundala charu karna, decorated by earrings resembling sharks and by beautiful ears. Brajat, brilliantly decorated. Kapola, forehead. Subhagam, declaring all opulences. Suvilasahasam, with smiles of enjoyment. Nitya utsahavam, satisfied. Drishibi, oh, I'm sorry, we got. Whenever one sees him, one feels festive. That's su savilasahasam, with smiles of enjoyment. Let's go back. Savilasahasam, with smiles of enjoyment. Not so. Let's try that again. Oh, well, everyone, we're in Slovenia for such a long time. Everyone reads Slovene. Except for me. Nitya utsavam. Whenever one sees him, one feels festive. Na tatripu. They could not be satisfied. Tat-na-tat-ripu. They could not be satisfied. Drishibi. By seeing the form of the Lord. Pibantya. As if drinking through the eyes. Naru. Or Nara. All the women of Vrindavan. Nara, all the male devotees. Cha, also. Mudita, fully satisfied. Kupita, angry. Nime, the moment they are disturbed by the blinking of the eyes. Cha, also. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Krishna's face is decorated with ornaments, such as earrings resembling sharks. His ears are beautiful, his cheeks brilliant, and his smiling attractive to everyone. Whoever sees Lord Krishna sees the festival. His face and body are fully satisfying for everyone to see. The devotees are angry at the creator of for the disturbance caused by the momentary blinking of their eyes. Purport. So this is descriptive. It's not, as a matter of fact, as we go to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, practically it's all descriptive. It's not philosophy. It's understood that we're very self-realized by now. We're past Brahman. Every time we hear any of the descriptions, we're in full ecstasy, and we see Krishna everywhere. Maybe. But that's what this is meant for. Purport. Well, that's who this is meant for. Devotees who have gone through the full nine cantos and have realized Krishna, and now they're going to hear about Krishna's pastimes. Now, if we haven't, every time we hear the word Krishna, we don't remember Krishna's form, then we're not actually going to be able to relish Srimad Bhagavatam the way a self-realized soul is able to do that. Still, we can read the 10th canto, and Krishna's pastimes are interesting. Even for little children, we can read the pastimes of Krishna at night to them, especially the killing of the demons, and they can sleep peacefully. Krishna is there to help them. Even the demons come to them at night. If they remember Krishna, Krishna will kill them. Purport. As stated by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita 7.3, Manushanam sahasreshu kasya yadari siddhaye yatatamapi siddhanam yaskim kasyinmam veti tatvataha. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. And thus one is qualified to understand Krishna, one cannot appreciate the presence of Krishna on earth. Among the Bhojas, Rishnis, Andakas, Pandavas, and many other kings intimately related with Krishna, the intimate relationship between Krishna and the inhabitants of Vrindavan is especially to be noted. That relationship is described in this verse by the words nitya nityotsavam na tatripur drishibi pibatyaha. The inhabitants of Vrindavan especially, such as the cowherd boys, the cows, the calves, the gopis, and Krishna's father and mother, were never fully satisfied, although they saw Krishna's beautiful features constantly. Seeing Krishna is described here as Nitya Utsava, a daily festival. The inhabitants of Vrindavan saw Krishna almost every moment. But when Krishna left the village for the pasturing grounds, where he tended the cows and calves, the gopis were very much afflicted because they saw Krishna walking on the sand and thought that Krishna's lotus feet, which they dare not place on the breasts because they thought their breasts not soft enough, were being pierced by the broken chips of stone. By thinking of this, the gopis were affected and they cried at home. These gopis, who were therefore the exalted friends of Krishna, saw Krishna constantly. But because their eyelids disturbed their vision of Krishna, the gopis condemned the Creator, Lord Brahma. Therefore, the beauty of Krishna, especially the beauty of his face, is described here. At the end of the 9th canto and the 24th chapter, we find a hint of Krishna's beauty. Now we are proceeding to the 10th canto, which is considered Krishna's head. The entire Srimad Bhagavatam Purana is the embodiment of Krishna's form, and the 10th canto is his face. This verse gives a hint of how beautiful his face is. Krishna's smiling face, with his cheeks, his lips, the ornaments in his ears, the chewing of betel nuts, all this was minutely observed by the gopis, who thus enjoyed transcendental bliss, so much so that they were never fully satisfied to see Krishna's face, but instead condemned the Creator of the body for making eyelids that obstructed their vision. The beauty of Krishna's face was therefore much more appreciated by the gopis than by his friends, the coward boys, or even by Jasoda Mata, who was also interested in decorating the face of Krishna. So one of Krishna's opulences is Shri, beauty. Now with our present eyes, we cannot see Krishna directly, although we may see the deity, but that doesn't mean that the deity fully reveals himself to us. Just like Krishna, Kamsa also saw Krishna, but he saw Krishna's death personified, which is not his original form. That everyone is satisfied or dissatisfied according to their ability to see Krishna. Just like the wrestlers, when they, Mustika, Chanura, Shalya, when they saw Krishna Balaram, they saw them, they looked like lightning bolts. As a matter of fact, Sri Rupa Goswami describes in the Nectar of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, then Krishna, when he walked into the arena to battle against those wrestlers, everyone saw Krishna differently. The young ladies in the audience saw Krishna's Cupid personified. The members of the Vrishni dynasty, the Bhoja dynasty, and Daka dynasty, they saw Krishna as the most illustrious ancestor or descendant. The yogis saw Krishna as the supersoul. Kamsa saw him as death personified. The wrestlers saw him as the thunderbolt. And the unintelligent saw him as the universal form. So everyone saw Krishna, yayatamam prapadyante, tamsatayva bhajamyaham, mama vatmanuvartante, manushaparta sarvasha. As we surrender to Krishna, so Krishna rewards us. As a matter of fact, we don't have to wait to have a reciprocation with Krishna. Our entire existence eternally has simply been a reciprocation with Krishna. We can't avoid him. As a matter of fact, as Srimati Radharani once said, that very person who I'm trying to avoid, he's in my heart. I can't get rid of him. So everyone has Krishna in their heart, and we can't get rid of him. Even Vilmangala Thakura said, when he was in Vrindavan for 800 years, at one point, Krishna, when Vilmangala Thakura first came to Vrindavan, then he was sitting there because he was blind. He had blinded himself on the way to Vrindavan, and he was sitting there, and Krishna came by and said, "My dear sir, what are you doing sitting here?" And he said, "I'm an old man, I can't do anything." He said, "Well, these ladies saw you, and they decided that I should go here and give you some milk." So every day, Gopal Krishna would bring Bilmangala Thakura some milk, just like he did with Madhavendra Puri also. It says that no one goes hungry in Vrindavan. So if there's a war and there's no food, everyone should go to Vrindavan, and then Krishna will bring the food there. He'll bring the prasadam. In any case, after some time, Bilmangala Thakura was a little curious, and he said, "Who are you?" So he said, "Well," and then he grabbed him by his arm, by his aunt. He said, "I know who you are, and Krishna, I know who you are." And then Krishna got loose from Vilmangala Thakura's hand, and then Vilmangala Thakura said, "Well, you may escape my hand, but you can't get out of my heart. I've captured my heart." So that's the sweet relationship between Krishna and his devotee. Krishna, if one captures Krishna by love, he'll never leave. Of course, he never leaves, but now he's the super soul. He's giving us everything we want, is either spiritually or materially, or what we deserve. But as we take to Krishna consciousness and surrender him directly, then we get Krishna directly, that's all. This is also Krishna we're living in. We're living in Krishna's universal form, but it's not a very nice form that we're seeing. Although we are attracted to it because it has some aspects of Krishna. It reminds us of Krishna to some degree. But Arjuna asked Krishna when he actually saw what the form really looks like. It's like Putana came dressed as a very beautiful woman. Does that mean that Putana was a very beautiful woman? No, she was a demoness dressed as a beautiful woman externally. But internally, she was the same demon that she always was. And therefore, when Krishna killed her, she manifested her actual form, which was not very pleasant, except for Krishna, who was able to play on her. So, similarly, externally, this material world may look pleasant to us, but Arjuna asked him when he actually saw what it really looked like, Agyaki me ko bhavan ugarupo namosti te deva ra prasida vigyatam ishami vantam adyam ihi prajanami tava pravritim. Agyaki me ko bhavan ugarupo. Ugarupo means this horrible feature of yours. Akyaki means, please tell me, oh, I mean, 5 minutes ago, you looked like a very nice person. You had lotus eyes. You were very polite. You were sitting on the chariot. You were a friend of mine. And suddenly, I find out you're not even a vegetarian. I mean, you're eating soldiers on the battlefield. You're devouring them in your mouth. Flame is coming out of your mouth. Have you been smoking lately? Where did all this fire come from? So Arjuna is quite surprised to see this his friend displaying this universal form, and it was not very attractive. Ugra Rupo, horrible feature. So Arjuna asks, what is your property team? Why are you doing this for? I mean, I can understand you're my friend. We used to play, you know, play games with each other. You play games with the cowboys. But why do you look so horrible? Such a nice person. Suddenly become, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Did you wake up on the wrong side of the bed today? So Krishna says, Kalosmi lokashaya krit pravrido lokansa maharta miha pravritim ritepina bhavishanti sarve yevastita pravrigeshu yoda. Kalosmi loka shaya krit pravrido. Time I am, and I have to come to destroy everyone. That means us too, by the way. That people used to be afraid of terrorists. I don't know if they're still now. Then they had COVID. I don't know what they have now. Always making people afraid. But they don't realize that the number one terrorist in the universe is Krishna. He's killing everyone. And no one avoids Krishna's death. Mrityu savaharashtraham. I come in the form of death and I take everything away. If someone comes and steals your pen when you're writing, someone comes here and takes hold of your pen and steals it and runs out, how disturbed will be? Why do they take my pen? I need my pen. Probably run after them. There'll be a fight outside on the ice. But Krishna comes and he takes everything away. Even our body he takes away. We're left with nothing. We're naked as a little soul. Unless we took some transcendental clothes from the spiritual world with us when we came here. Otherwise we have nothing. So why did you do this? Krishna says, time I am, destroyer of all the worlds, and I've come here to engage all people. But for you, the Pandavas, both sides here, everyone on both sides here will be slain. So God is a nice person. He's killing everyone. Everyone, even that little baby. He's killing the little baby. What did the baby do to him? He didn't, you know, he can't even call Krishna a bad name. He can't even speak. And yet Krishna is killing the little baby imperceptibly. He's growing old, going towards death. So Krishna says to Arjuna, it's not all bad. Tasmadu tishti shola basva jitva shutram boksha rajan sramidam mayayavatan niyatam purvam evam nimitra matram bhavasavasa chin. Just get up and prepare to fight, and after conquering your enemies, you'll enjoy a flourishing kingdom. Very put to death by my arrangement, and your savasachi can be but an instrument in the fight. So the trick is to become an instrument for Krishna. And if we become an instrument for Krishna, what we'll do, what we'll lose is simply our false ego. We won't identify ourselves with this body anymore. We'll only identify ourselves as with Krishna, as Krishna's servant. Now, if we have plans to be happy in this material world, then it's not going to work. Neither will we become happy in the material world, nor will we become Krishna conscious. The more plans we make for happiness in the material world, the more we complicate everything. And therefore, if we make plans to become Krishna's instrument, whatever we're doing, it's not that we have to give up anything, because we don't own anything. We don't own our body, manasadeha, yogichimura, manasadeha geha, yogichimura, arpalu tunya pade, nandikishora. That my mind, which is the hardest thing to give up, my mind. I can give up my body, but I can't give up my mind. Whatever my mind tells me, I must obey. Because if I don't obey my mind, it'll make me feel bad. And I want to feel good, so I'll obey my mind. And then I'll feel good. And even if my mind makes me feel bad, I'll just pray to it, please, let me feel good. And the mind says, yes, by my mercy, you can feel good. Manasadeho. And our body, of course, as Lord Vishnu told Rikasura, that your body is meant to fulfill the desires of the mind. So if you wear your body out, your mind can't be pleased because it can't do anything. So take care of your body is the first necessity. But Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, Manas, my mind I'm going to use in Krishna's service and my body in Krishna's service too. Deho, geho. And even my house, I'm going to do arti in my house. I'm going to chant Hare Krishna, offer prasadam in my house. Yogichimo. And whatever else I have, I'm going to utilize in Krishna's service. Arpi lutuya, pade nandi kishu. Because actually everything already belongs to you. I'm just agreeing to give it back to you. That's all. I'm just agreeing that it's yours and therefore I utilize it according to how you desire that I should use it. Then Krishna will show us his lotus feet and gradually we'll be able to see his lotus face and Krishna's Sri, he's Aishvaryasya Samagrasya. He's completed all opulences and will fall in love with Krishna. In other words, Krishna is so attractive in every way, the more we become conscious of him, the more our natural love for him will develop. He's our best friend, he's the most compassionate, he's the most loving, he's the most beautiful in every respect. His beauty is not just external, but it's also internal. His beauty reflects the loving compassion he has for all his devotees. And therefore that loving compassion especially becomes all attractive for the devotee. Generally if we look at people, they don't look at us with love and compassion. They look at us in so many different ways. Just like I said the other day, there was one devotee, his father was not very favorable for Krishna consciousness. He was in San Diego. He was the head of the Philharmonica Orchestra. He was a wealthy man, learned man, and he was puffed up. Thinking, who are these devotees? They're a bunch of beggars. And Srila Prabhupada came to San Diego and his son invited his father to come and meet Prabhupada, to see Prabhupada. So the man was very skeptical that this man, he's exploiting these young people, etc., etc. And therefore he was constantly trying to get his son away from Krishna consciousness and criticizing the devotees. But Prabhupada walked in and he walked by the son, and he walked by the father, and immediately the father paid obeisances to Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada, as the devotee described it, looked at both of them with such compassion and love, the father had no choice but to pay obeisances. And then later on, the son asked the father, why did you pay obeisances? I thought you were against Krishna consciousness. You constantly talk against it. He said, this man was in the mode of goodness, I had to offer him respects. He was so good, I had to offer him respect. So that goodness is unlimited in Krishna, and therefore the more we become Krishna conscious, the more we'll surrender to Krishna. We won't have to. Even Krishna's representative, Prabhupada, people would just be forced to pay obeisances to him. They didn't even know why they were doing it. But it would be a spontaneous activity. What to speak of if we actually, because of loving service to Krishna, Krishna revealed himself, like he revealed himself to Dhruva Maharaj, who was ambitious for a kingdom greater than that of his great-grandfather, Lord Brahma. But when he saw Krishna directly, he fell in love with Krishna. Swami Kritarto Navarache. He said, I was looking for some broken pieces of glass, but now I found a diamond like you. So as we become Krishna conscious, we won't have to think about how I can surrender. That will automatically surrender because of Krishna's all attractiveness. We just have to make an effort to catch up to Krishna. Just like if you're a train's going and you have a bicycle and you're trying to catch up to it, it takes a great effort. The train is going fast. And the bicycle we have to pedal the bicycle very fast, so it's difficult. But once you catch up to the train and grab hold of it, then the train grabs you and pulls you along. And you don't have to make any effort. So at first, to become Krishna conscious takes quite an effort. If we're willing to make that effort, eventually we'll become Krishna conscious, and then there'll be no more effort. That Krishna's all attractive form will attract us in every way. Just like Indra Dumar said that when he accompanied Prabhupada from France to England. And when he got to England, the luggage was late. So they told him he had to stay back and pick up the luggage. So in the meantime, Prabhupada went to the manor with the devotees. They had the kirtan, they had a feast and everything. A couple hours later, Indra Dumaraj picks up the luggage because it came late. Heavy luggage, drags it out of the airport, drags it to the Bhaktivedanta Manor, drags it up the stairs, no prasadam, no one helps him, of course, take the luggage. He drags it up to the second floor where Prabhupada was, he knocks on the door and brings the luggage in, and then Prabhupada walks in, and Indra Dumaraj pays his obeisances, falls flat on the ground, and he feels this slap on his back. He says, "What?" And then Prabhupada walks out of the room, and Indra Dumaraj comes, he says, gets off the floor, he says, "Well, what happened?" He said, "Well, Prabhupada walked by and slapped you on the back." He said, "In the material world, everything is very difficult, but when you get to the spiritual world, it will be very easy." So that's what we're facing. Now it's a little difficult, but if we catch up to Krishna, everything will be very easy. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. We have a microphone, I think. Anyhow, why don't we just pass it back and forth and someone can figure out what it just say, just take it, it's all right. He'll translate for you.
Krishna je čas, a ne? Kako lahko kako naj razumemo čas v povezavi z nami?
Krishna is time, obviously. How we can't understand or how we could understand Krishna in relationship with time?
How do you understand? Time is bringing us either to Krishna or into another form of life, according to what we want. If we want to embrace Krishna, time will help us bring us closer to Krishna. And if we want to embrace another form of life, then time will bring us to that form of life we're desiring or we're acting in order to achieve. So time is the form which fulfills our desires. brings us from one form to the next. Gives us the results of either devotional activities, or it gives us the results of our materialistic activities. Just like if you want to make orange juice, you have to get oranges, you have to get a squeezer, then you make the juice, and the idea, then you'll drink the juice, you'll get the results of it. So if you're making orange juice, then you'll get to drink orange juice. If you're going to make some other thing, like bitter melon or something juice, Corella, and you squeeze it, eventually then you're going to drink it. It's going to taste very bitter. No one can claim that. Why does it taste bitter? What did I do to make it taste bitter? Well, you're the one who got the bitter melon. You're the one who squeezed it. You're the one who's drinking it. Of course it's going to be bitter. So we have to know what we're doing, and time will help us achieve it. Think, as it says in one book, think with the end in mind. We should know what we're trying to achieve, and if we work towards it, then time will bring us to there. Does that make you understand? Anything else? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you says Maharaj that Krishna will always reciprocate with us.
He's always
reciprocate. Yeah.
He's always doing it.
According to my understanding, if devotees sometimes don't have taste in any service, doing anything, even chanting, does that mean that Krishna don't at that time reciprocate with us?
No, he's reciprocating with us. He's giving us an opportunity to hanker for him, to take shelter of him.
And according to that, I mean, it is difficult to continue service just out of duty if we don't have taste.
Well, duty is also service. We use our intelligence. Of course, you know, if we have no taste, it means that was something to be learned. And part of the learning is we have to learn tolerance. We don't have a taste because we were intolerant. And therefore we're learning tolerance. And if we don't want to learn tolerance, then we'll put ourselves in a position, eventually we'll be forced to learn tolerance. So better to use our intelligence and understand, right now I have no taste because I did things in the past where I couldn't tolerate. So better learn tolerance now, go on with my service, in spite of no taste.
Thank you. Another one, if I can ask... Sometimes we think that people who are wealthy think that it is not a good approach to the people when we are, like example, in Harinam with some little pot for donation. And we think wealthy people
are wealthy, so they can put a lot of money in.
Yeah, but we think that wealthy people don't want to appreciate devotee to be beggars, but...
We're transcendental beggars, of course we are.
Yeah.
Everyone's a beggar, we're just acknowledging it.
Yeah.
They're also getting from Krishna. Yeah. Everyone's a beggar from Krishna.
Yeah. So also part of Prabhupada's philosophy is that we can approach with that humility and ask people kindly, please can you help us? And in that way, I mean, to wealthy people put in a little even higher position than we are.
Yeah,
and
of course.
They would appreciate that.
We're supposed to learn humility. Trinada, peace, and ichena. Not that I act as if I'm humble. And after I get the donation, I think, wow, look at all the money I have. I'm so rich. Hey, bow down. No, it's not ours. It's not theirs either. It's Krishna's. So we should always be humble. Because we have a very humble position. We're 1/10,000th the size of tip here in size. So this is pretty humble, isn't it? I mean, just imagine if you're less than an animal, atom. So it's a pretty humble position we always have. Now we may imagine with this body, all the things go along with it, but actually we're a very humble position, and we're just recognizing it. And the more we become Krishna conscious, the more we see how wonderful Krishna is, and how wonderful everything else is, we won't mind being so small, because we'll be in love with everything. We'll do whatever little we can to please Krishna. Yes.
In connection to being good, I find it particularly hard when I feel that I want to be selfless towards someone who doesn't seem to... I mean, I feel that that person may not deserve it, but because I want to be good, I still want to serve, I want to be selfless and not think of myself.
But who's yourself? Yourself is part and parcel of Krishna, the 1/10,000th the size of two parents' size. So if you selflessly serve Krishna under his authorities, then you'll be selfless to everyone. If the connection with Krishna, then it's possibly selfless with everyone. But if you're not connected with anyone who's not connected with Krishna, can't be selfless. One will naturally be connected to the mind and the body and one's conceptions of life. And it's impossible in such a condition to be selfless because we're an illusion. We don't know who our self is. Anything else? Kuala Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.